Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Pat Nevin, good evening.
How you doing, Joe? How you doing?
Pretty
just
well.
Realised I look very black on this, the screen that we've got up here. I'm not in mourning, don't worry.
Very avant-garde, very Parisian.
Yeah, very much so. Well, it wasn't the look I was going for, but it's just, it's been cold here, that's all.
Okay. I'm just trying to warm up. Can I throw something to you? Because I was having a conversation with somebody just the other day who loves his football. We all love our football. And I was saying that this league, this season, is right up my street. I don't think it will last. I think the big boys will eventually get back on top again and we'll see 100-point winning tallies. But for this season, if it is this season only, I love the fact that when I tune in to watch Liverpool-Brighton, there is now a very good chance Liverpool will muck up, or City will muck up, or anyone can muck up, anyone can beat anyone. And I was saying I much prefer this, in the main, to the Liverpool-City basically winning every single game. Now, it had its own dramas within that, but, you know, I much prefer it. And he was saying, oh, no, I want to see, you know, football at its best, and we're not seeing football at its best. And I was countering saying, oh no, you know, when it's a Tiger Woods or a Ronnie O'Sullivan or a Michael Schumacher, you know, I can buy into that argument because there's a purity about that. I don't really care, you know, if the oil money is put together this brilliant Man City team. It doesn't have the same kind of soul to me. I want to see them getting beaten more often. So I'm loving this league season. He's finding it a bit frustrating. Where is Pat Nevin?
Well, I'm not finding it frustrating at all. I love the good football, but it's like, you can love Cordon Bleu, but like a good Vindaloo now and again. It's one of them, isn't it? That's just my analogy for that one.
Why didn't I think of that analogy to put to him?
But you know exactly what I mean, don't you? Because, you know, we've had it for a while. I mean, even look at other leagues, Barcelona being what they were after a while. And after a while, you're thinking, yeah, but, you know, what's next? You know, and you kind of do want what's next now and again. And I'm with you 100%. The City and Liverpool were unstoppable, fantastic, and it got a bit of a yawn for everybody for it to some degree, you know, out with a bit of chin stroking that we all like to do now and again about how wonderful they are and why they're so wonderful. But yeah, I'm with you. I want to see it. I mean, remember, I was brought up with Celtic and Rangers, and for goodness sake, guys, can somebody else win something for a change? And it was a real lift when I was a kid, when like Aberdeen and Dundee United came through. So it gives everyone a lift. And certainly for the other teams, if they have a little bit of belief. The thing that got me in the middle of all, when it was at its worst, I mean, I was at the Man City game at the weekend there, right? And they were back to Man City again. Mm. But the thing that gets you is you turn up and there is no jeopardy. And just yes. None at all.
Yes.
And that's not what sport's about, really. I mean, I love the beauty. I love all that stuff. But you need a bit of jeopardy now and again. I mean, you go to a game without it, then you start looking for something else. You start looking for tactics. Start looking for the beauty of the game, which is fine if you get David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Right, you need it sometimes, and everybody loves it, surely. Funnily enough, I was talking to somebody, a very famous American girl, Heather O'Reilly, about not this similar thing, because they don't really get this underdog thing that we've got. Like, you know, we always really want an underdog. But the Yanks are much more for this, the best of the best of the best kind of thing. But we kind of see that. But we got to see a bit of excitement. That's why we love competitions, yeah. Isn't it? But you're right. I'm really enjoying this season. But look, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, then the top teams probably will end up there. The big teams, teams that get the most money to spend will end up at the top. I'm not sure it will be the 100 points, though. I'm really not sure about that. I'm not convinced City are good enough. I'm not convinced Liverpool have got the depth of squad to do it again. And one or two teams, some of the Spurs are better now, Chelsea are a bit better now. So, you know, there was a few points here and there.
No, I agree. I didn't mean this season. I think they'll get back to it again, or somebody will get back to it again when they recalibrate things. But at the moment, I like on my Saturday now sitting down to watch Liverpool away to Brighton, knowing that I've got a match here. And that's kind of the thing. So
the other psychology, just before you go off it. It's the amount of times you watch these games and you know the team's beaten as they walk out onto the field.
Yeah, it's terrible. But
the other side of it is when they lose one or two, then the fear goes completely. I mean, teams take on Arsenal now and I don't see any fear at all. I don't see any fear for just about anyone taking on Arsenal now. But if they went in a long run, it would kind of psych them out and the managers would go negative against them. So it's great to see it.
Mm. Well, speaking of Arsenal, the David Luiz situation seems to have been the main talking point. From a weekend talking points, I mean, geez, around lunchtime Saturday, we thought, well, for sure, I'll be talking first thing on Monday to Pat Nevin about Jurgen Klopp. That feels now about 3 months ago. So the David Luiz situation, what's your read on the criticism of Luiz staying on the pitch? That's if we boil it down, that's where we are with it.
Well, first of all, it's not a criticism of Luiz. I'm sure you weren't meaning that at all. It was the medics. I mean, in the end, the football folk have to wait for the medics, and the medics make the decisions, and they've got a line of protocols that they follow. But that one was, to say it was on the edge was pushing it, on the edge. It was a big old dunt. But I have to try and remember back to, you know, I was playing. And for somebody who didn't head the ball much, I got a lot of head injuries. It's really strange. So for the people that did head it a lot, they must have got so many more than me. And number one, I wasn't the best person to decide whether I should stay on or not. Absolutely. At the time, I'm staying on and I want to stay on. I don't care what sort of situation. I once smashed and caved in my whole cheekbone, completely gone, the whole side of my face. But I didn't know it had gone and I was trying to play on. So you're not the one to decide, right? So you have to leave it in A, the medics, and B, the people who are running the sport, and to make the right sort of decisions. And I have to say at the moment, I mean, I'm one of these people who always wants evidence of, you know, because there's a correlation, it doesn't mean there's a causation, right? Yeah. That's science for you. That's the way it is. But the way it is in football just now, because it looks so lax on situations like that, you kind of almost want to say, look, just don't take a chance. Don't take a chance. It's not worth it now. Football's got such a bad history of just wrapping people up. There's a famous quote, I'm sure there's a version of it in every country, but the version of it in Scotland comes from Partick Thistle, and it was a player who was playing, John Lambie, I think, was the manager, and he said, oh, he's concussed, he doesn't know who he is. He said, tell him he's Pelé and tell him to get back on again. And kind of funny, but not really, because that's the way it was in football. It's such a bad history that you kind of, you take it out of their hands. But it's out of the hands of the clubs. It's in the medics' hands, but it's also in the controllers of football's hands. And at the moment, they're behind the curve. There's no doubt they're behind the curve.
It would seem that way. Like the latest protocol were introduced 2014-15 season, and new rules had to deal with head injuries. They state things like any player suffering a head injury must now leave the pitch, and the club doctor has to decide if the player is capable of continuing. Not the team manager, not the coaches. So that's a step forward. And all Premier League players go through a pre-season neurological assessment to set a baseline level. So when they're answering questions in the assessment later on, there is a baseline level to compare to. So Gary O'Driscoll is the Arsenal team doctor. You know, we're very familiar with him over here. He's high profile. People are very aware. He's been over at Arsenal. I mean, he was the senior doctor on two Lions tours. Highly respected, did a lot of campaigning on this issue. And he led the Premier League working group which looked at concussion during the 13-14 season, and that working group ultimately put forward some of these suggestions which came into effect in 15. So this is not somebody who takes this issue lightly at all, far from it. And Arsenal have come out and said they vigorously dispute any criticism of their conduct, and they say the correct concussion protocol was followed, and they are, you know, militant about that. I was just, you're trying to do a bit of digging. Certainly the FA do say, and there is a tagline for all levels, if in doubt, sit them out. And it says, at all levels in football, so we can assume that includes Premier League, at all levels in football, if a player is suspected, and I think that's the tricky word here, if a player is suspected of having a concussion, They must be immediately removed from the pitch, whether in training or match play. Now, Arsenal will say, well, they were removed and they passed the test. But I wonder how, given the force, and we all heard the sound, my God, the sound, how could there not still be some small, tiny suspicion that Luiz may have had a concussion? And that's where it gets tricky.
Exactly. And if I was a medic, I'd be better qualified to tell you. There are times, I certainly know I bump my head in football games and I know it's a bit iffy. And other times I'm thinking, well, actually, I know that's fine.
Yeah.
I know that's fine. That's just it's just a clack and it just moves off and there's no reaction at all. And it's not even dependent on force a lot of the time. Mm. Positioning, you know, whether you saw it coming, whether you'd be able to move your head out of the way, all that sort of stuff. There's no simple one. He must have got on very quickly and he must have checked him right away, to which if Luiz seems completely coherent, you know, which I'm getting is quite tricky with David sometimes because he always wants a laugh, etc. But you're right, there must be a possible suggestion. But the problem is with football, and we found it with every other part of football the last 2 or 3 years. Okay, make a rule and make it sort of watertight and absolutely can't move it. So will be, you'll have to, if you bash head, you're off. That's where it has to go to. Mm. So if there's any suspicion at all, if you've cracked a head on something, you need to go. And it may be quite a soft one, but that's where the end is. Because where do you say, we could hear the Luiz one, so it must be bad, so he must go off. But I've seen another one the other week there where somebody headed someone else in the back of the head, and it wasn't that bad. But where do you draw the line? I don't know where to draw the line.
I know, yeah.
There's no way you know where to draw the line.
Yeah, no, it is very tricky. I mean, last night's one felt, and I'm deliberately using an emotive word because we're not medics or scientists, but it felt wrong given the force of the impact. But I totally take your point. Anyone who's played at any level has had genuinely innocuous bangs of the head. And now you can get pilloried for even saying there is such a thing, but, you know, we've all been in our bodies. You can have innocuous bangs to the head, and you know the blood aspect visually then just draws attention to it. But like blood, a cut is not the same as concussion.
The cut sometimes relieves it. That's the thing. It sometimes relieves what the build up of bruising and things like that. And actually, the other ones that sometimes they're actually a wee bit easier because you've not got the kind of build up of blood and the pain that stress that causes on top of your head. So it doesn't actually help you. The blood thing just looks bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually help. So, again, we must be, to some degree, you know, we must hold up to the belief in the medics and they're given the correct instruction. It just feels there's been a few, you know, and there's not that many, let's be honest about it. That one's bad, but I mean, there's actually not been that many. To be honest, the more common case is a player hurts his head and the doctor says, right, he's off, and the player's arguing with him. That's a more common thing. Mm. But even so, it's not that common. I do like, and I suspect it's your next protocol, I like the idea of a 10-minute, you know, you go off for 10 minutes and you can have a sub for 10 minutes and check them out. I'm good with that. I think that it's only a halfway house, but it's better than what we have just now, which is, you know, they're desperate to make a decision because you don't want to play on with 10 men. Mm. Well, you take that pressure off by saying, right, okay, put somebody else on in the meantime. I think that's it's kind of wondering. It's certainly a step that should be taken, doing it just now.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love a bit more information about it. Maybe Arsenal will or won't do that. But again, you know, there are examples in rugby of players who pass their HIA, their head injury assessment, but still the medic will say, I've had a look at it in the replay. I still don't like it. Still don't like it. And we're just going to put
it out. That's the difference. You mentioned that you had a look in the replay. The doctor, a lot of the time, who sometimes they run into the field, they're not seeing the replay. So they're not getting everything.
No.
So that's the other one that gets me. Somebody, again, I can't remember who it was, got hit in the neck this week and held his head, which, as you know, is my absolute pet hate. Mm-hmm. Pretending you've got a head injury is just, I think that's a red card offence, right, if you ever pretend. But then I thought about it, actually, he might have had a little bit of whiplash.
Yeah.
So maybe, so you can't prove that one. That's a really hard one to prove. But I like the fact that it's been talked about. I like the fact that some people are very, very strong on it. I don't know. We've all got our own wee suspicions. Mine's is purely from my background of what happened to me in the game. And it's always been the same. Like, I wouldn't worry about repetitive heading. I would worry about danger over the years, because I, like every other player, had a lot of head injuries, and you just don't know which one was the one that caused the problem.
Mm. So look, that's going to drag on. We'll, I suspect we'll come back to it. And the Premier League are under massive pressure now to bring in some kind of protocol. I would say this season. You know, Alan Shearer last night said, not next week, not next month, now. And, you know, that's it.
Well, he knows, to be honest, he knows a lot.
He's got
a
lot, some, yeah.
A lot of people don't, because he had so many head knocks. I mean, loads and loads and loads of them. And he I'm not saying he's sitting worried, because he looks like a kind of guy that just got on with it. But the head knocks he had, and he played on with. I mean, I can remember, I'm sure you remember pictures of him with his head bandaged up as well.
Yeah.
And he'd just get back on with it. And he knows that, you know, in retrospect, that wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah. So what have I jotted down here to touch on? I have Chelsea, Spurs. I have United yesterday. I have a little bit of Klopp with Des Kelly, and I've a bit of Celtic. Where do you want to go? Please don't say Chelsea, Spurs. Please. What I mean?
No, no.
Are you going to chin stroke and tell me it was tactically fascinating?
No, it wasn't great. Yeah. I didn't massively enjoy the game of football, so, and we didn't get the best out of both teams, which is a real shame, because, you know, with the amount of attacking players that are in both teams, you thought it could have been really special, but it wasn't. I'm not going to blame Josie for being Josie, it doesn't matter. But in the end, both teams are probably quite happy with that one. So it's, you move on from that. The only thing I would say about maybe Chelsea specifically, what Klopp was saying, what others are saying about the five subs, I did a little bit of doodling today to see, right, okay, then who's actually best positioned in the league? And it actually might be Chelsea. It might be Chelsea. They could probably benefit more than anyone else from that. Maybe Man City are up there as well. But if you look at the depth of squad with the quality all the way to player number 23, it's Chelsea and it's Man City.
Mm.
And it's definitely not, it's 100% not Liverpool. And it's not Manchester United either. It's those two. So if you do the five subs and consider they will be used frequently, and you'll end up having to go to, you know, number 18, 19, 20 in the squad eventually, the teams that are going to actually be helped more than anyone else are Manchester City and Chelsea.
Mm. What am I missing, by the way, when I'm sitting there and, you know, accepting of the fact that this is still Jose Mourinho and he is inclined towards the cautious? But I'm sitting there thinking, is Gareth Bale that bad that he's not worth 10 minutes here?
That was a surprise, but I think he's just happy with the
point.
With the position. The players they brought on actually did okay. So, you know, whether Bale's got a little bit of an injury, which is quite common.
Yeah.
But he didn't look like it, did he?
No.
You looked at him warming up. You looked at him, and he didn't look like a guy who was nursing anything. So that was a wee bit of a surprise. But, you know, I suppose he's looking at it thinking, right, I've got a point here. What's the possibility of getting something more? They're under the cosh. Why bother? I'll use him when I need him. Absolutely use him. He is at his best. Gareth Bale at his best is a scarce resource. So you decide when you really, really need it. So it may well have been that. That's scratching at it a wee bit, you know, looking for an excuse. If I was a Spurs fan, I would have been screaming to get him on. But he got a result, got a 0-0 away from home at Chelsea, and they're still top of the league. Come on. Can't really argue about it.
Okay, fair enough. Edinson Cavani, Kraft. We're talking here about Kraft, aren't we?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Over the years of watching Cavani, there were long periods of time where he used to get loads and loads and loads of chances and scored quite a few goals, but his conversion rate of good chances really wasn't particularly good. But his movement was brilliant. He's a very, very good player. He certainly should have got a hat trick. I mean, anyone who watched the game, Rashford not passing that ball, that's just unthinkable. The one across, I mean, it's just unthinkable. Don't tell me, Marcus, you didn't see him. I'm not having it. So
yeah.
Not getting him that goal was really, really poor by Marcus Rashford. And that's a phrase you rarely hear these days, because he's been so superb in every area of life, including football and outside football. But the way he's come on, and, you know, he looks... Some players just come and they come to a club and they look a bit old and a bit, not past a bit, you know, they're earning a few quid, and if it works for them, it works for them. I mean, you know, there's been one Sanchez at Manchester United jumps out to you. But you look at his attitude's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, his work rate is absolutely superb. His passion for it, the passion for it's great, isn't it? You see it. And again, you know, some players you just stand on beside and say, see that, that's passion. Can he use it? The other guy standing there, or sitting on the bench usually, showing you very, very little passion. And it's infectious, and you know, you can't help but love the fact that he gives that to the team. I thought it was super when he came on. One blasted over the bars, I can remember, getting the goals, and then getting that one. He should have had a hat trick, and that would have been. But it's just funny, but it sums up the season, doesn't it? I don't know what you thought, but I was talking to people at half time, and they're all saying, "Man, we told you Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was hopeless. He's absolutely terrible. He's hammering them." So they win 3-2. They are where they are in the league, which isn't bad, and they were third last season. I mean, to be fair, in comparison to everyone else since that Alec Ferguson, it's not bad, is it?
It's not terrible, no. So Liverpool won, Brighton won. We mentioned that it would be worth sticking around to see what Jurgen Klopp would say afterwards last Monday, and we weren't disappointed. So here's a little, I think most people have heard this at this stage, but just if you didn't, on BT Sport, Des Kelly faced the task of talking to Jurgen after a 12:30 Saturday kickoff.
And James Milner, hamstring, is it?
Yeah, congratulations.
Not me personally.
Oh, no. Oh, but oh, you better work for them, yeah. Hamstring. Surprise. And they had injuries as well because of tough time. But ask Chris Wilder how we can avoid that.
Well, maybe you're firing at the wrong target. Maybe you're firing at the wrong target because we are broadcasters. We work within the Premier League rules, and the Premier League makes the rules. So that's the Premier League clubs. So shouldn't you be talking to the Premier League clubs? Shouldn't you be talking to
the
chief executive?
I don't know how often I have to say it. You picked the 12:30 kicker. You. Not you personally, but you did it. Did you? No, us on 12:30. So between now and December and the new year, there's one more Wednesday and then Saturday.
Yeah, but when you say you picked the 12:30, the Premier
you
League clubs
us on 12:30.
Chose that slot. There's a reason that slot is there.
I told you, I said it now a couple of times. These are difficult times.
They're difficult times. The stadium's empty. Of course it's difficult times. And the broadcasters are supporting the game.
And we have to... Yeah,
they are.
But if you play at 3 o'clock or 5:30, it's exactly the same. It's Saturday.
Has different ramifications. You should be going to your chief executive should be with the other chief executives having that discussion. We can't. If you come down here and just have a go at the broadcaster, it doesn't go anywhere. It's not going to change anything.
I've had a go at the broadcaster. I just say how it is.
You said 12, it's criminal.
12 after Wednesday, after Wednesday, Saturday 12:30 is really, really dangerous for the players.
Yeah, but
you don't do that often.
You also said the broadcasters don't care, and that's the problem. It isn't the problem. The problem is
why did you pick us then against Crystal Palace? If you care.
Well, I didn't pick it, but every pick is agreed by the Premier League.
Can I tell you
every
say it one more time? Because it's such a special seat. You always rely on things we agreed in another time.
No.
Yes, we did.
No. Listen, if it was all about player welfare, why did the Premier League clubs block the five
substitutes? Because that's very interesting now. When we had the talk between the managers, it's a week ago, I think, it was 15-5, if not 16-4, for five subs now. Since then, nothing happened. So, because you need at least 14 votes, but Chris Wilder or whoever says constantly that I'm selfish. So, I think all the things he said show that he's selfish, but it's now not too important.
Chris Wilder got a few mentions. I don't know. It's good TV for a start.
Can I say one thing? Like, I mean, I'm sure people will take sides on it, right? Generally, Jurgen Klopp is well-loved, right? Generally. And I buy him greatly myself. But wasn't it great to see a real journalist, and by the way, Des is a real journalist, having a go, having the discussion, not backing down and trying to put the point across. The vast majority of people that are put in that position generally basically cower.
Yeah.
And he didn't cower. He just said, no, we need to hear this. And he was really good in it. And when you know that the manager's turning on you and he's a perfect position, usually you duck. But he didn't duck. And I was really, really impressed with him doing that. And that's why it was great, because we finally got to see that. And I also loved the fact that Jurgen could have actually started to try and really bully. But when he tried a little bit of power and it wasn't working with Des, he came back off again and he started having a discussion. So, right, I liked that. The fact that we had a quite grown-up discussion about it. That was really good. Mm. And I thought a lot of people probably learned a lot out of it. And what Des was saying was really, by the way, of course, you know that Des, good mate of mine, etc., you know, but the Des was saying, look, you need to get the Leafs to sort this out. There's no point in pointing it at one person. It's not one person or one TV company or whatever that's making the decision. It's the whole thing. It's football together. And I think Jurgen wouldn't be going on about it too much if they had the five subs option. The big argument, which Des didn't bring up there, is, you know, you have got a wage bill of how many hundreds of millions of pounds. Wouldn't it be better to have a really bigger balanced squad? You know, so you pay so much for a number of absolute superstars, but if you lose two or three of them, you're stuffed. It's part of the joy, part of the greatness of management is making sure that squad is as balanced as it possibly can be. And that may well be what's hurting Liverpool a wee bit at the moment. Mm. So, you know, I love the discussion. I like the way it went. Everybody wants a black and white, yes and no, good guy, bad guy, in that argument. There isn't one. There's quite a nuanced debate going on there. But the nuanced debate has got to, and it really has to, end up with five subs. It really has to.
Well, it's Chris Wilder's fault, Pat. I mean, you heard it there. I agree with you. It was good TV. You know, it's because generally, and people might not always appreciate this, in press conferences, you only get to ask one question. So question, answer, next person's turn. So in that instance, you can't go back and forth, and it's terrible. And it's designed that way for an obvious reason, to stop that happening. Yeah. So, and then equally on TV, like Des is taking a chance there, Des Kelly, because, you know, he kind of needs Klopp to talk to him for the next couple of years after each match. And, you know, we overhear it with Martin O'Neill and one of our main reporters, things got very tetchy and it's tricky, you know, and he needs to argue with Klopp but not destroy the relationship and still be a journalist. And, you know, he walked that line really well. Before you go on Celtic, they lost 2-0 to Ross County in the League Cup. I've only about maybe a minute here. There were idiots outside Celtic Park last night and police had to turn up. They've condemned the violence. Players and staff had to get a police escort leaving the ground. A mob of supporters gathered through missiles. This feels like it's over for Lennon now. Is that where we are?
It is, but I just hope it doesn't feel like he was kicked out because of the mob. Because of the mob turning up the way they did. It was like you said, idiots. And to be honest, for Celtic Football Club, who've had these fans that have been sort of lauded for many years by many people as the greatest fans in the world and following the team everywhere, scenes like that are bad enough anywhere in the world. You mean South America, you don't want to see scenes like that, right? It's just unacceptable. But then to see it here, in the middle of a pandemic where people are getting together, I mean, honestly, and if anyone says the phrase to me, you know, yeah, but what about, and say, give some excuse because, you know, it's going for 10 in a row. No, that's not an excuse. It's not good enough, not acceptable. No, I'd like to hear sorry to everybody that those people did that. Not from the club, but from any groups of supporters that were involved with it. Right? So that's absolutely unacceptable. And by the way, digging me up all day long on Twitter about it, don't care. You're in the wrong in this one, okay? As for Lennon, I feel sorry for him. Shall I try, just for fun, to try and make an excuse for him, right?
Yeah, please. No, please, because I can see, look, it's gone very badly on a whole host of fronts, and they're 11 points off Rangers with two games in hand, but it's gone really badly, so yeah, sure.
Right, not playing well. I was at the only game they've lost in the league before this season, right? So they're against Rangers. So it's a Rangers game, that is the one, and by the way, they're rotten, they deserve to get beat for that game, but they are 11 points behind. They've got two games in hand, they might win those two games, right? If they beat Rangers on January 2nd, they're 2 points behind. They have won the last 11 trophies in a row. Lennon's history has been phenomenal with that club and what he's helped them build and what he's helped them get. And if we are in a situation, from one angle, for in a situation where a guy can win that much and do that much and then not get the players he wanted to get in the summer, and then you go out with one trophy, European stuff doesn't count. They haven't got the money to even get close to being competitive in that. But they go out with one League Cup. They're still in the league chase. They're still in it. But if they do that, how do you survive in the world of management if you win 11 trophies in a row? That's an argument for, do you know what? I'm not sure I believe that argument.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They, to be honest, they've not been good. The decisions haven't been good. The buys haven't been good. And it doesn't look as if they're working for them. So it might not be long for Lenny. I hope, for his sake, he lasts till January 2nd, till the Rangers game. I think he probably deserves that. But I know what Celtic fans will say. We might lose our 10 in a row by then, and it's not worth the chance.
Yes, okay. Pat and Evan, as ever, brilliant stuff. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Minimal contact in stadiums shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Jared Bowen has put West Ham 2-1 up against Aston Villa. 78 minutes on the clock. Last 10 minutes have been all Aston Villa, I should say, and they missed a penalty. So this one not quite done yet. 78 minutes on the clock. 2-1. West Ham. As we mentioned with Pat there, nil all between Chelsea and Spurs yesterday. Not a classic. Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Doyle were on commentary for Off the Ball.
Well, it finished Chelsea 0, Tottenham Hotspur 0 at Stamford Bridge this afternoon. A hugely anticipated match going into the Premier League weekend. Kenny Cunningham. I thought it was kind of one of those very enthralling games where you're kind of sucked in and drawn in by the tactics. I've since seen a few comments on social media saying it was a dull match. Did you think so?
I thought you were overhyping it a touch during the commentary. I've got to be honest with you. I didn't want to drag you down. It doesn't take a lot to get you inside, Stephen, does it?
No, was it duller than
I enjoyed managed? The game. No, I'll buy into that a little bit. I enjoyed the game. There wasn't too many clear-cut chances both ends of the pitch. Wasn't too many chances full stop. And, of course, a lot of people will switch off when that's the case. But it was an interesting game. Just the tactical setup from both teams. I was very impressed how Marino set up his team. I can see why he's actually gaining a bit of confidence. He's got that bit of a swagger back. And I think it's because of how his team's playing. I think he sees the DNA of the team now is getting close to what he wants. They have a real kind of physical presence to them now when you look at the team. That midfield three, Højbjerg today, Ndombele and Sissoko, powerful lads in there, can get around the pitch, kind of make tackles, can get up and down the pitch quickly. Good technical ability as well, Ndombele in particular. And then Højbjerg, they got that holding central midfield player, which he hasn't had probably since he's been at the football club. So I think he likes what he sees there. The defensive line, I thought, was rock solid today. Young Joe Rodon, you mentioned before the game, thought he'd done absolutely great. Bit of pressure on his shoulders today. Thought he came in and stood up really well. And I think it's a Tottenham team, you could say, with one or two more personnel. The likes of Matt Doherty comes in at right back. Gareth Bale, Alderweireld comes back in. His experience as centre-half. It's a team that can actually get better as the season progresses. So I can understand Mourinho being a little bit of a smug attitude at the moment, because he's probably looking at his team thinking, do you know what, I like what I'm seeing here, getting hard to be here, real physical approach, we look dangerous on the counter attack, we can maintain possession as well. They had some periods when they kept possession of the ball very quickly, so they're not kind of one trick pony that's just going to sit on the edge of the penalty box and look to counter attack with kind of the pace of Son, Bale and Bergwijn in particular. So yeah, I think Mourinho will be really pleased with what he saw today. Maybe felt as if they could have snatched it late on. The opportunity presented itself, possibly the last kick of the game. The Celso took the wrong option on the edge of the box. But in reality, I don't think either team deserved to win. Done enough to win the game today. A draw was absolutely a fair reflection of the game.
It's funny because we know Jose Mourinho, even from when he came into the Premier League first with Chelsea, his big thing was he wanted to have, say, 22, 23 players, two players for each position in the field. He seems to have that now. They're playing very well. As you mentioned, Højbjerg seems to be really key to how they defend. They've got players working back. The players all seem to be behind him, Son, Kane. They seem to like Mourinho. They're behind everything that he's doing. Now, before the Premier League started, and unsurprisingly, nobody really had them in as their choice for Premier League winners. Now, we're 10 games in. There's a bit of shape on the table now. I'm not asking you to predict will Spurs win the title, but do you think now
I'll
they are
that.
Realistic
I'll
challengers?
Answer that. That's not a problem for me, Stephen. That's why I'm paid the big bucks, so you keep telling me. No, it's far too early in the season to be... I don't think Spurs will win the title. That's an easy thing for me to say.
Are they probably going in the conversation more than they would have been before?
Absolutely. I think the interesting one is, I've been asked this before, actually, will they actually challenge for the title? I think it's too early in the season to be having that conversation. Yeah. I think if I don't think Spurs will challenge for the title. And by that, I mean, when we get to the start of April, maybe half a dozen games before the end of the season, if Spurs are still in a position to challenge, then if they're top of the league, they're on the coattails, the first couple of teams above them, the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City, then absolutely, yeah. And they have a chance of winning it. then absolutely they'll be challenging. I don't think you'd say because they're top of the table at the end of November, they're challenging for the title. I think that's far too soon. But you're absolutely right. I think the nature of the season that we're having, the fact that Liverpool have got their issues, particularly in terms of injuries to key personnel, Van Dijk and Gomez in particular. Manchester City looking a little bit out of sorts. I know they got a good result yesterday, but you feel as if they haven't been quite at it. So I can understand the likes of Chelsea and Tottenham in particular are getting just a little bit of sense of, oh, hold on, just an opportunity just may present itself this season for one of those two teams in particular to make a charge and steal a Premiership title. We've seen it. We've seen it with Leicester some years ago when the so-called bigger teams have tripped up a little bit over the course of the season of league points, and Leicester were good enough to take advantage on that particular occasion. So that opportunity may present itself, and you're probably right, of the teams we've seen already, probably Spurs and Chelsea are the teams I think best equipped to put a challenge together. I wouldn't rule out Manchester United. Again, it's too early in the season. I think they potentially, in terms of quality of the squad, in terms of attacking quality in the team, potentially signings in the transfer window, you could make an argument maybe for Manchester United inching towards the top four. But I think it'd be for Manchester United to get themselves involved, it really would need the top two to really hemorrhage a huge amount of points. I don't think that'll happen. I think Liverpool will just keep chugging away. Manchester City, I'd expect a reaction. I expect them to come good, particularly second half of the season. So really, I think it's probably Spurs and Chelsea up the chasing pack. You could kind of probably make an argument even second half of the season of chasing down those top two. But Spurs are the ones who really who've actually surprised me in terms of the how much the improvements that they've made, just not only in terms of personnel but in terms of the playing style. They really impressed me today, that performance.
Looking at Chelsea, and for all the attacking talent they've brought in, the likes of Ziyech, the likes of, well, Pulisic is already there, but Timo Werner was brought in, Kai Havertz was brought in. They brought in some really top quality attacking talent. Now, I know you had to bring Pulisic off the bench because he was injured the last five games. Havertz has had his issues as well, so there's been problems there. But look, they've played, you know, Tottenham saw off Manchester City, beaten 2-0 in the last season, or last weekend. Chelsea have played Manchester United. They've played against Tottenham Hotspur, yeah, two of the big clubs, and they failed to score against them. That's a bit of a concern for Chelsea supporters.
Yeah, maybe so, but I wouldn't judge them too much off the back of today's performance. There's a big drop-off today. I was actually very disappointed with Chelsea's attacking play today. A number of their forward players just off colour. Ziyech has been outstanding since he came to the club. Nowhere near the levels he set himself today. Tammy Abraham's on the periphery of the game today. You know, some good things, some bad things as well. A little bit sloppy. Werner was in and out of the game. Couldn't really impact the game. Kovacic, centre midfield, again, didn't really have much of a say as an attacking threat. So we know Chelsea are better than what they showed today. I think it's a fair point what they're up against today in terms of the Tottenham defensive shape. They really put it up to them. Didn't give them those little spaces to play, those little combinations play. Maybe the other teams have done that. The defensive shape from Tottenham today was absolutely fantastic. I thought just didn't have the space, suffocated those Chelsea forwards to a large extent. But you're right, Chelsea are going to have to deal with that as the season progresses. You're going to have to find a way to get through that kind of blanket defence. And they weren't good enough today. But what I would say about Chelsea, I think they can improve off the bench. Pulisic, for me, definitely takes them to another level when he comes onto the pitch. And Havertz as well. I know he's had a slow burn in terms of his Chelsea career as well. But he's a really creative player as well, who can operate kind of centrally just off the front. And he's got goals and assists in him as well. So I actually think there's more to come from Chelsea as an attacking threat as the season goes on. And they look as if defensively, you know, they've got a nice little cohesive unit down back there. I don't think it's perfect, don't get me wrong. I think Kurt Zouma still has a few mistakes in him. Chilwell, very productive going forward and will do as the season goes on. But it's still, even still, I still have some questions about him defensively. So it's not perfect. It's not perfect. And that's why I wouldn't be banking on Chelsea or Tottenham winning the title if I had to put money on this table. I still look to Liverpool and Manchester City to wrestle it out come the end of the season. But I can understand why some of the Tottenham supporters and Chelsea supporters are getting a little bit excited because of the improvement that we've seen, certainly from both those sides since the start of the season.
Two quick ones before I let you go, Kenny. Just to ask you, obviously Manchester United played today. We watched a bit of that game beforehand and we saw Edinson Cavani come in there and score the two goals to win that match against Southampton. They were 2-0 down. Just in general, like, it strikes me, Cavani, it's almost like one of those Alex Ferguson signings when he got Van Persie in that time, or, you know, Cantona when they won the title. Yeah, you know, he's got the makings of one of those kind of players that can come in and can turn United into one of those teams to challenge for trophies. And those two goals, like we were talking before the game, or before our own game this afternoon, how he's just got that pure striking quality, hasn't he? He's just such an experienced player to come in there. And he could be huge for United this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like one of those players who has the personality to deal with coming to a club like Manchester United. Not overawed, but actually embraces the challenge. I've always been a huge fan of Cavani. Back to his Napoli days, I absolutely loved him. Was devastated when he signed for PSG. For me, he was good enough at that time to play in some of the great sides around Europe. But I'd love to have seen him come to England at that particular time. Could have played in any team, Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City. For me, he was that good. And such a great team player. Work rate is absolutely phenomenal. But that shouldn't disguise the fact, Stephen, he's a very clever operator. The quality of his runs in and around the penalty box are absolutely fantastic. And if Manchester United supporters, or supporters in general, didn't realise it, the game against Istanbul midweek was evidence to that. The way he played that central striking role in a three, his link-up play with Fernandes, Martial and Rashford that night was an absolute joy to watch. His decision-making, laying it off first time when he had to, quality of his runs down the side of opposition defenders, timing his runs into box, near post, back post. I really thought he actually elevated the whole Manchester United attacking performance. And he's the type of player, I think the younger players like Rashford and Martial, they love playing with. Because they can loan them the ball, he'll keep it, and he'll find them, he'll play them in, he'll make some great runs, he'll take players away, he'll make space for other players. He's a fantastic centre forward. I've loved him to death since he broke onto the scene. And you're absolutely, I was surprised he didn't play today. I was amazed he didn't play off the back of that performance. I was thinking, wow, he's got to start now. He's got to start now essentially, and you take your pick who plays either side of him, Martial, Rashford, or Greenwood. Fernandes, we know, plays in that area just in behind. So very surprised not to see him on the pitch today. I thought, again, that diamond formation didn't suit Manchester United against Southampton. But second half, they kind of rectified it a little bit and got him on centrally. And he was the spark that brought Manchester United back into the game. He's got to be the way forward for me. Whichever way you play, they ended up playing almost 4-4-2 today, Manchester United. I don't think that's the right shape. I'd love to see him go back to their orthodox 4-3-3 formation. I think that's the formation that suits them best. But Cavani down the centre of the pitch, flanked by whoever you want, for me, is the way forward for Manchester United. And he gave an indication that, again, second half today, the impact that he made.
Just to finally ask you, Kenny, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, around Jurgen Klopp's comments yesterday. He had that set too with Des Kelly from BT Sport.
I just wanted bloody to interviewer, Stephen. You should be ashamed of yourself antagonising managers like that.
He was well prepared, Des Kelly, so all credit to him. But the one thing, I want to come at it from a different angle, okay? Now, there's been a lot of focus on the times of the match being played, all that kind of stuff. But look, there's two things. I think there was a bit of Mourinho and a bit of Alex Ferguson in what Klopp did yesterday. From a Mourinho point of view, he's kind of distracted everybody from the performance of his team and dropping those 2 points in a match they really should have won. And perhaps he should have brought Mane on a bit sooner, or probably started Mane. Perhaps he should have left Salah on a bit longer. I don't know, but he's distracted that people from having that conversation. The other thing as well is, Kenny, and you'll be able to give us a bit more on this. If you're a Liverpool player in the dressing room and you're up against it, a lot of your teammates are injured, you're trying to fight to defend your title, and you see your manager going out there and fighting for you like that against the media, against the tournament organisers, that must be huge for the players. Like that's the kind of thing, like Ferguson would have done back in his heyday with Manchester United. And that really builds morale. And in a time when Liverpool are struggling to get players fit, this will give them a real boost to see their manager out there fighting for them.
Like right. That. Now, I understand the argument that you've made, but I totally disagree with it.
Okay.
I'd be exactly the opposite. I'd want to see the exact opposite from my manager in front of the cameras. Now, there's a lot of talk prior to going into the game, a lot of talk from Klopp in terms of the fixture congestion, injuries to key personnel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For me as a player, I don't want to hear that. I was never in that environment, that winning environment as a championship winning team, et cetera. I understand that. But generally speaking, for being in the dressing room, I never like to hear that kind of negativity come from my manager. There might be some truth to what he's saying, but I don't want to hear that. I'd rather he box that off and put it to the side and be a little bit more positive in terms of his outlook. Rather than saying all of these bloody games we got coming up, I'd rather hear him say, well, let's embrace it. Yeah, the games can't come quick enough. We can't wait. This is the position that we want to be in. Big games coming in thick and fast. I trust the players. Yes, we have injuries, but you know what? I'm not worried because we've got some great players waiting to come into the team. We're ready for the challenge. That's what I want to hear, that kind of positivity exuding from the manager. So I flip it the other way. And even after the game, I understand he had some reasonable points to make, but it was the tone of the interview after, which really, I was actually cringing a little bit listening to him. And again, as a player, it's exactly what I wouldn't have wanted to have heard from the manager. I just thought talk came across like very sarcastic, condescending. And I don't think it would have a huge effect on the dressing room. That's a battle-hardened Liverpool dressing room. Experienced players, serial winners. I'm not going to say it's had a negative effect on the dressing room, but I think the effect that it has is on the other teams, the chase and pack, the likes of Manchester City, Chelsea, Tottenham, their managers and players. When they listen to Klopp react like that pre-match and post-match, for me, that gives them a little bit of encouragement, as if to say, ooh, Klopp, he's rattled a little bit. He's, you know what I mean. He's taking the bait there. He looks unhappy. You know, he's having a blast there. That for me as an opposition player and manager would give me a little bit of encouragement. So that's why I'm saying I'd actually like to see the totally opposite approach from Klopp, because I think the reaction from the Liverpool players since the setbacks, the injuries to Van Dijk and Gomez has been great. Yeah. I think they've really showed that kind of collective strength which they have, that kind of winning mentality. They've all come together and kind of ploughed on regardless. The results have been very good since those injuries. You know what I mean? So no need for me for the managers to be out there front and centre and bemoaning the fact that they have to play so many games, bemoaning the fact that he's picking up a few more injuries, bemoaning the fact that he can't use five substitutions. Just basically stop moaning. Stop moaning and start giving your players a lot more credit and be a lot more positive and put out a lot more positive spin, not only to your players who will be watching, but to the general public in general.
Great stuff. Thanks, Kenny. Have you picked one, Limerick or Gal, or sorry, Limerick or Waterford, yeah, for the Honour of Royal?
I'm sticking with Waterford. After that, I didn't see the game today, thanks to you a lot.
Yeah.
But that second half performance from Waterford last night literally had me, I was engrossed, I was in. I was there, had massive buying for me, so brilliant. I'm going to wear no Waterford connections, obviously, but
of course.
Might go down Caravan down there back in the day.
Sure,
that was Wexford. No, that was, I don't think we made it past Wexford.
Joel Shane, into Waterford. Delighted that he was here. Thanks very much, Kenny.
The main man, Kenny Cunningham, talking to Stephen Doyle yesterday. Commentary every Sunday from the Premier League here in Off the Ball. Into injury time, West Ham 2, Aston Villa 1. Villa just had a goal disallowed. VAR intervened. Offside was the verdict. So still 2-1 West Ham with about a minute to go.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.